It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. For several years now, there's been a widely held perception that the job market has favored workers. Listen to these news reports from 3 and 4 years ago.
We don't want to do this anymore.
They just didn't care about me anymore.
I'm done. I am not working here anymore. I don't feel safe.
Workers like these are quitting their jobs at the highest rate in 20 years. Because for many of us, the pandemic has prompted a professional reassessment.
Our show takes you today to the United States, where 2021 was the year of the Great Resignation, a new expression to explain what some are calling a work revolution.
Businesses closing their doors, employees working crazy hours. It's all because of the so-called Great Resignation.
Now, in many ways, the times have changed. Employers talk about getting thousands of applicants for each posting. Workers talk about applying to hundreds of jobs and not getting so much as a rejection letter. Meanwhile, a lot of people who already have jobs are hanging on to them, even if they don't necessarily like the work, because they can't get in anywhere else. And all this is on top of broader uncertainty about the American economy. Here to talk about what we're seeing is Andrew Weaver, associate professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He joins us in studio in Urbana. Andrew, welcome back to the 21st show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Juan Carlos Donoso has been investigating what everyday people think about the economy as senior research scientist with NORC at the University of Chicago. That's short for the National Opinion Research Center. Juan Carlos, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And a bit later in the hour, we'll get some perspective on how businesses are navigating the labor market from the head of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. For now, you can join the conversation at 800-222-9455. Maybe you or someone you know has been job hunting lately. How's it going? Do you see a lot of help wanted signs out in the world? And what do you think are the biggest factors making the job market what it is right now? 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Andrew Weaver, I'm going to start with you. As you look at the job market right now, what trends jump out at you?
Well, I think, we have seen rising unemployment, modestly rising, but rising nevertheless. We have seen perhaps, just as importantly, a decrease in things like quits and a decline in job openings and hirings. Again, the early signs are modest, but modest directions towards, more people sticking with the job they have, less kind of dynamism and churn in the labor market.
About a month or so, when we got the latest job numbers from the federal government, there was pretty significant revision downward in the number of jobs that had been either, I can't remember if it's created or how it's phrased, something like more than 900,000 jobs that we thought were there turned out weren't there. And that goes back like a year, suggesting this weaker job market maybe has been with us for some time. Can you speak to that?
I think, this is a time of transition. I will say a lot of the
recording in progress
weakness that that we've kind of seen recently, I do think is loaded more onto this year and some of the, we can get into the factors, but some of the uncertainty that has arisen, I think, has contributed to, much more cautious hiring decisions on the part of employers. And, that's led to a, weaker and more slow growing job market overall.
Apparently the government's listening to us and recording our conversation now. or maybe it's just someone leaning on the wrong button on Zoom. All right. Juan Carlos Donoso, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. So you heard what we've been talking about. How do you see some of those trends reflected in the survey research you all do at NORC?
Yeah, well, recently we conducted a poll with the Wall Street Journal we interviewed 1,527 adults across the United States. And what we find concerning the job market is that about half of all respondents say they are concerned about the availability of good jobs at this point. And that is a trend that's especially noticeable among young respondents, that is those between the ages of 18 and 34, among female respondents. And interestingly, among non-college respondents. And why I say interestingly there, it's because there is also a trend that we have been noting in polling, and it is that more and more adults say that the cost of a four-year college education is not worth it. However, it is non-college educated adults who tend to be more concerned about not being able to find good jobs in today's economy.
How do you see things like artificial intelligence weighing on the economy, right? Automation, I guess, has been a story for a long time. Maybe this is just the latest iteration of that. But how do you see that weighing on the economy when it comes to jobs, Juan Carlos?
It's sort of it's the same, right? It's still, obviously, it's something that it's now pervasive in our lives. People use it every day, be it for work or personal reasons. But there is, again, there is a divide on how Americans see the role of AI in the job market, right? I think that about half Americans see it as an opportunity, and the other half see it as a threat to American workers. Younger respondents are more likely to see the emergence of AI as a threat that could, something that could damage their perspective and their earning potential.
Andrew Weaver, I wonder if you can speak to that. I mean, as I mentioned, automation has been a story of workers for a long time, generations, really, centuries, maybe even, you could argue. It seems to be going up the from blue collar work, which was. Seem to be the Industrial Revolution was able to automate more, to now information age. Although maybe that's not as new a story as we think with these AI discussions. But I'll let you riff on that, Andrew.
Sure. So I think AI is another form of automation, and there's perhaps more continuity with past automation experiences and lessons than people widely realize. I think it's worth noting that automation, AI in particular, is not one thing. There's a difference between Microsoft Copilot affecting administrative assistants versus, a stock trading algorithm affecting finance professionals. And, it's not necessarily the case that there's going to be one impact of AI across the job market that's universally negative or positive. The evidence that we have, it's very early days, but there is a lot of, for all the jobs that are, replaced, and we really don't, we don't see widespread job replacement at this point, but there's a lot of new task generation and a lot of, there are new occupations created, and, people tend to not appreciate the power of a lot of these offsetting productivity effects, while focusing on, worries about, technology is going to take my job. It's early. It's always possible this time's different. But, I think there are also a lot of reasons for optimism about, how this will ultimately play out.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. Our topic for the rest of the program today is the state of the job market. Slowing hiring, people struggling to get jobs, people who already have jobs trying to hold on to them instead of maybe trying to find work that pays better elsewhere. We're talking about this with Andrew Weaver, Associate Professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the U of I, Urbana-Champaign, and Juan Carlos Donoso, Senior Research Scientist with NORC at the University of Chicago, the Opinion Survey Research Group. And we'd like to bring another voice into this conversation now. Lou Sandoval is President and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, which represents many of the state's biggest businesses. Lou, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the 21st show.
No, thank you for having me on. I'm very glad to be here.
Listeners, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Lou, we've been talking a bit about trends in the job market. What are you hearing from businesses right now? Hiring, firing, keeping things as they are?
I think there's a lot of treading water right now. I think, hiring in Illinois is a bit of a mixed picture. Many of our members, you know, whether they're in manufacturing, healthcare, logistics, professional services, you know, they're still competing for talent in a pretty tight labor market. You know, I mean, when you look at, you know, the certain sectors, especially in skilled areas, it's a very tight labor market. You know, obviously the newer, you know, aspect of things, the, you know, recent college grads, there's a plethora of that that's out in the market, but they may not have the skill set, entry level positions to kind of bring them in. They're looking for people that can drop in place. And you know, if you really look at it, we're sort of at an intersect. You know, the baby boomer generation is, you know, is kind of what, a little bit over halfway through its retirement period, you know, between now and 2030. And then you have not enough Gen Xers to fill the gap. And so you're having to go to the successive generations. And, you know, these new, as you get into new markets, you need a lot more of the technical skills needed, especially with the introduction of artificial intelligence and the like, as a workforce augmentation tool. But really, you know, the difficulty in finding qualified workers, but also retaining them, is challenging given the rising cost of living, and then there's just wage inflation and still wage competition that's going on. But you know, at the same time, we're seeing a lot of firms lean into tech. Augmentation. I mean, we don't need to go too far in the restaurant business. You know, as the push to, you know, $15 minimum wage has pushed a lot of automation on the front of the house. In the back of the house, it has brought, you know, is basically made the investment, which is where the product's made. So, you know, entrepreneurs in those particular areas are utilizing technology on the front of the house, bringing their human capital into the back of the house. Because that's not an area where you can replace it as easily, especially in boutique or specialized, you know, restaurants and the like. So, you know, it's really
that's an interesting point, because I was recently stepped into a McDonald's for the first time in probably literally years. Not that I, you know, not above eating McDonald's from time to time. I just hadn't gone in a long time. And I was pretty surprised at how little room there is for the counter. It's just a big screen. I think they're expecting people to do the work of placing the order themselves and not actually talking to a human for that. So that speaks to what you were talking about.
Yeah, no. And you're seeing even small mom and pop restaurants go to that. I mean, I eat at a little Asian fusion restaurant that's here in the Loop sometimes. And they've gone to touchscreens in the front. They've eliminated the busboy position. The server is now the owner and owner's relative, and most of their talent's in the back of the house. And I think you're also seeing that because of, especially in Illinois, rising property taxes, which is have increased the size of you know, reduced the size of a particular footprint that a restaurant can have. So you're taking a lot. There's a lot more get and go type of, you know, establishments in the food industry. Because you're, you know, if you can't fill those seats, it's basically dead space that you're paying taxes and rent for. So I think there's multiple factors driving employment right now.
What about AI and hiring? We've talked about how it affects the actual, you know, the work that's being done. But are you seeing that businesses using more AI in, you know, sort of screening applicants, or even maybe using it to decide whom to keep on, whom to let go, that sort of thing?
I think as a first we'll call it a first phase screening tool, you're seeing some of that. Applicant tracking systems with sentiment analysis have been there for now the greater part of a decade. You know, and these are a lot of your, you know, your ERPs that people use for a variety of different reasons. But you know, those applicant tracking systems do weed through, you know, resumes, CVs, bios. And they find the keywords that are tied into the job description. There's also a further sentient analysis now that's being used with LLM that goes in and basically weeds through commonly used phrases and, you know, kind of categorizes. You still need human beings to be able to kind of make the final decision. So I think it's a combination of how to get there, you know?
Let's, before we need to take a break, which is in about 3 minutes here, Juan Carlos, let me ask you about another issue that's been in the news, potentially affecting the economy, or not potentially, but affecting the economy. What did you hear from people in your surveys about tariffs and what that means for our economic picture?
Yeah, overall, the view about tariffs is negative, right? That it will have a negative impact on the country's economy. Like everything these days, it's heavily influenced by partisanship, right? What we see is definitely those who identify Democratic having a much more negative view of tariffs than those who identify with the Republican Party. But overall, you know, especially among young respondents, and pretty much across the spectrum, the view of tariffs is not a positive one.
Andrew, there are so many people who are hoping the tariffs will bring jobs to the United States. I wonder how much that lines up or maybe doesn't line up with the economic reality.
Well, I should say I'm somewhat skeptical that tariffs are going to end up having the desired effect. I think the main problem from my perspective is that even if you buy into the idea that you're going to, you know, increase the cost of imports and you're going to bring some, let's say, manufacturing back to the U.S., in order to build a new factory and make these kind of long-range fixed investments that play out over years and years, there has to be a lot of confidence that the same tariff regime, the same kind of consistent economic policy is going to be in place for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, for a long-lived physical asset. And, I just don't think any businesses could have confidence, particularly in this kind of chaotic environment right now, that that's true. So, at this point, I would say it's unlikely that it's going to spur the kind of, investment boom in tariff-protected industries that, that some may be hoping for.
Well, we happen to have a representative of business here. We can ask about that confidence and certainty in the future of our economy, but we're going to have to wait until after the break to do that. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about the state of the job market in particular in the American economy. Our guests are Lou Sandoval, president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Andrew Weaver, professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at U of I Urbana, and Juan Carlos Donoso, a researcher with NORC at the University of Chicago. More to come after a break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the state of the labor market in America, from people looking for jobs to people leaving the jobs they have or not leaving them. Also, how businesses are or are not hiring and firing people. We heard from some of you about this in our texting group, which you can join by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. Jesse in Mattoon told us, "My partner is an in-home care worker. She's passionate about her work, but the pay is on par with fast food and the benefits are non-existent. She wants to find a better paying job, but feels like she'd be abandoning her client. Wages are important, but satisfaction after a day's work means something too." We also heard from Tony in Champaign, who said almost 4 million students graduate high school each year. Just to have jobs for them, we'd need more than 300,000 openings per month. We're so far below that, I won't be surprised if there are panhandlers on every block, and yet everywhere I look, I see things that need to be done. I think we're in bad shape. Jesse, Tony, thank you for your messages. You can join us today live at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you've been looking for work or you know someone who's been looking for work or wants to but hasn't been willing to leave their current job because of the way things are. Let us know, 800-222-9455. We're talking about this with Juan Carlos Donoso, senior research scientist with NORC, the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, Andrew Weaver, associate professor in labor and employment relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Lou Sandoval, president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. Lou, before the break, we were talking about tariffs and the uncertainty that brings to the world of business. I wonder what you're hearing from your business members at the chamber about the effects of tariffs so far.
So I think tariffs bring an uncertainty, and I think I'm going to make a comment on that in terms of some trends that we're starting to see, and I'll kind of highlight one manufacturer, Illinois-based company that just made an announcement recently. But I think, 90% of politics is local, and economic factors are local, and you know, business leaders admit that their essence are resilient in nature. And I'm talking about the 91% of our business community that is small, medium-sized businesses, which make up a majority of our economy. Well, obviously, everybody thinks of business, they think of the, you know, the who's who in the Fortune 100. But, you know, I think there's a few key items in local politics that are affecting, you know, the state of business in Illinois. And that's first the state's budget. You know, obviously, we knew well before the election that there was a deficit going into the session. And, you know, we've continued to grow the size of the budget, you know, to kind of carve out of what the previous administration had done, you know, at the state level, you know, to kind of, you know, balance things out or kind of grow it without any commensurate cuts. You know, there's a lot of tax policy debates that are going on right now. Ultimately, any tax increases or, you know, we use the populist rhetoric, anybody that's made to pay more of their share, it's going to have an inflationary impact on taxpayers, because that gets passed along through the cost of goods and the cost of services. So, you know, I think we're in a very precarious area when we have an unfunded pension issue. We have transit. We have a lot of different things that are going to require revenue. I think a majority of people understand that, you know, nothing in government is free. But when we have deployed, as I like to say, the backup parachute and the backup to the backup parachute, now the only way to go is inflationary and adding taxes on top of taxes. So that is a problem. So you add tariffs to everything, and that's just yet another issue that to face the business community, and it has inflationary impacts to it. Now, there are companies that are making moves based on, you know, and I think it's taken on a case-by-case basis. There's an Illinois-based company that recently made an announcement that they're consolidating their offshore, basically not offshore, but their south of the border location in Reynosa, Mexico, bringing those fiberglass manufacturing, they're absorbing them into existing facilities in Florida and in Tennessee. Now that means that those jobs south of the border are probably gonna, you know, go away. Some of them will stay, and maybe they come into those other two locations, but they're consolidating operations to bring them. And obviously the impact of tariffs on bringing products back over from Mexico is not a benefit, and adds additional cost to a product that that might hurt market share. So I think on a case-by-case basis, companies are making decisions to bring manufacturing in place. Now, that particular case that I gave you is one where they already have existing facilities where they could just absorb that product line into any of those two other locations, Florida or Tennessee. The requirement, I think, as was stated earlier, of having to build something de novo from scratch, you know, leads a little bit more of a timeline and a reality factor of can it happen. So, I mean,
by and large, would you say that the businesses are more, you know, they want to sort of abandon the globalization thing we've had since NAFTA for the last 30 years and go back to a sort of pre-NAFTA environment? Or would, you know, all things being equal, would they rather have the option of, you know, doing more stuff overseas?
I think they're trying to find the balance in it, you know, and we're in, we'll call it uncharted waters, we'll call it that. So you don't know what you don't know yet until the dust settles and we figure out where, you know, what is the impact going to be? Can you continue to make product in other areas of the world? Does that product have to serve that particular area of the world? For the longest time, for us to have, you know, American companies to have facilities in China, you had to build in country because of the tariffs of importing. And that, you know, a lot of people had, you know, so that's a way that China drove their own economy and jobs by making other global manufacturers have to create sites that serve Asia or their particular market in country. So, you know, companies are taking it on a case by case basis to see where it makes sense and where it, you know, if not, you know, they keep the locations in place and, you know, the tariffs get applied to the cost of the product.
Andrew, how are all of these trends affecting people, getting back to the job conversation? How are these trends affecting people trying to get jobs?
Well, as we said before, we've seen a downturn in hiring, which I do think has a lot to do with you know, the uncertain climate and uncertain economic policy that you know, has kind of taken hold of late, and we've seen a decline in quits. So, you know, there is you know, the labor market shows a little more sign of freezing up again, less you know, less kind of free flow. from job to job, less hiring, less you know, less people exiting jobs, more people hanging on to what they have. You know, that's kind of the trends in the data we're seeing right now.
And we talked about people you know, not wanting to leave jobs necessarily. There's also this phenomenon of people feeling like, and this is maybe not as visible unless you know someone or you yourself work in like a retail or fast food environment, that sort of thing, where the hours can vary a lot from week to week. And I gather, you know, that was certainly true even a couple generations ago when I worked a cash register at Toys R Us, but I gather it's even more pronounced with software and apps. How do you see that affecting people's livelihoods?
So I think that is a, you know, that's an important job quality element. It's certainly something that, you know, a lot of workers have raised, and advocates for workers, about job quality in sectors like retail. And, you know, I do think those types of, you know, scheduling decisions and more generally across a lot of sectors, making work, you know, more family friendly, work friendly, is a bargaining power issue. And, you know, there is this this kind of tension between flexibility, you know, that employers may be seeking, and job quality and ability to kind of balance work and family that that workers may be seeking. And it goes up and down depending on, you know, what's the unemployment rate, who's, you know, who has relatively more bargaining power in the economy. But that certainly is something that that very much affects workers, you know, well-being, and, you know, is a very legitimate target for, you know, advocates for workers to try and improve job quality.
I'll just refer people to our website, 21stshow.org. We had a conversation taking an even deeper dive on this idea of job quality based on a recent survey on our show last week. Again, you can find that at 21stshow.org. Juan Carlos, how optimistic are people when it comes to the economy in your surveys, given everything we've been talking about?
Not very. And it is it's a little bit of a puzzle because we did spot a trend. You know, people are, I guess, more, they sense the state of the economy better than they have, you know, in the last couple of years. But they are more pessimistic than they have been before about their own prospects and the prospects of the country. So, yeah, that's an interesting trend that we're noticing. So, you know, and again, this has a lot to do with partisanship. We notice, you know, there's three main wedges where we see, you know, the three main cleavages. We see partisanship, we see age, and we see gender. You know, young respondents, 18 to 34s, they are the most pessimistic ones. Female workers, they are more pessimistic, and obviously Democrats, right? But it is interesting that while most American adults do think that the economy is doing better than before, their prospective view of the economy is not a great one.
Andrew, we're coming to the end of our time. What do you see happening policy-wise to deal with all of this?
Well, I think that's a huge question mark. The, you know, presence of both the shutdown right now and also all of the federal workers who took the buyout, which is, you know, 150,000 workers, you know, that's, you know, has significant potential implications for ripple effects on consumer spending and, you know, again, increasing uncertainty about where things are heading. So I, you know, I really think, and you add in uncertainty about AI, uncertainty about future, you know, tariff policy, uncertainty about, you know, various political moves. And, you know, I think, you know, until that kind of uncertainty gets resolved in some way, you're going to see a lot of cautious hiring and slower growth.
Lou Sandoval with the Chamber of Commerce, what are some of the things you're keeping an eye on that might give us a sense of where the economy and the job market are going from here?
So I think I think employers are closely watching energy costs and infrastructure funding. I think, you know, here in Illinois specifically, those are two things that are really big. They're also watching taxes, property taxes, because you can't, you know, ultimately you can't grow a reliable business, or, you know, grow a business or attract business if you're bringing new businesses to the state without reliable power and a transit strategy. Having come from the entrepreneurial world and the, you know, business world myself, I always will put my money on the American entrepreneur. Even in today's, you know, we'll call it pessimism, you hear from the other two guests, entrepreneurs are very optimistic. Business owners are optimistic. Why? Because they know if it's to be, it's up to them. You know, so if we can get clarity and a competitive environment, they'll do what they do best, basically. They'll create jobs and strengthen communities. And ultimately, that's what's there. I think when you have other factors like rising minimum wage, that traps people into an economic caste system. And even at full time at, you know, $15 an hour, it's $30,000 a year. That's below the poverty level. You know, and I think this is where certain policy making that's happened on one side of the aisle has not favored the American worker, because what it does is it rises wages, rises inflationary costs, and they end up running in place. Hence the treading water comment.
I think a lot to unpack there, but unfortunately we are out of time to do so today. We will have to continue this conversation another time. Lou Sandoval is president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. Juan Carlos Donoso is senior research scientist with NORC at the University of Chicago. And Andrew Weaver is associate professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Lou, Juan, Andrew, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your expertise and perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, novelist Shelby Van Pelt. Born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, she now makes her home in Illinois, in the suburbs of Chicago. Her breakout debut novel came out in 2023. It's called Remarkably Bright Creatures. We'll talk with her about that ahead of an appearance in a book talk next week in Central Illinois. Before we go, I want to urge you to join our texting group. We ask questions about shows we're working on, and we love including your comments on air. You can do that by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. TALK, 217-803-0730. You can find that and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.